All right, are we ready to start? Okay, not too crowded in here, at least. You're not squished together. If you are here because you're interested in seeing what's happening with social studies, then you're in the right place. My name is Susan Palmeter. I work for the Michigan Department of Education. I'm living the dream. Every little girl hopes to grow up and someday work in MSTEP test development. Am I right? I come from the classroom, and I think like a classroom teacher. 1 year ago at this time, I was in the classroom. I was teaching social studies courses at East Lansing High School. I've taught for 16 years, and I've been with the state for 1 year. I just celebrated my one-year anniversary, so I survived. And I will tell you that I have learned a lot about test development and state-level views of education generally. And I also have learned enough to know that there is so much I don't know. So if during the course of our time together today, or after you leave here today, you realize you have questions, and if I'm not able to address them for you, and that's, you know, a likelihood, there's a lot to learn, then there's information for you to contact me or to contact the state to get some follow-up, any specific questions that you might still have. Okay? So, we ready to get going? All right, here's what I hope to achieve today. Number one, I want us all to leave here with a better understanding, which does not mean a perfect, thorough, complete, deep understanding, but a better understanding than we arrived with about the new social studies standards. How many of you knew that we have new social studies standards in Michigan? You're all wrong. They're not new. They are revised. And for teachers, that should be somewhat reassuring. It wasn't a throw out the old and let's reinvent this wheel. It's a revision of the existing standards that the state has had for many years. So we'll look at those more closely. That's going to be my primary focus today, is looking at those new standards. I look at those, again, from the perspective of a teacher. What does this look like as a teacher in the classroom? I also will connect a little bit with what does that mean in terms of implications for the MSTEP. As well. So we'll look at that. Those MSTEP implications. We'll look, if we have time, the development of the MSTEP. If I'm running out of time, that's the piece I'll probably cut so that I'm sure to get to my final piece, which is to try to drive home the point that the MSTEP depends on classroom teachers contributing to its development. And so I'm always in the recruitment mode for teachers to help us develop a better MSTEP. We have new standards. It's a wonderful opportunity to reassess how we assess and do it better. Okay? So I'll hit those items in order, which means the first thing up is the K-12 social studies standards. A little bit of background. In 2014, the State Board of Education put out the call to revise the social studies standards. Anybody know what year was the last year we had revised social studies standards before 2019? They just feel that way. 2007. So we had standards revised in 2007. 7 years later, the school board felt it was time to revise them. And their call was they need to be updated. Some things have been happening in those 7 years, so we need to look at whether it's, you know, significant court cases, legislation, current topics and issues that are kind of rising to the top. So they wanted them revised generally, but they also, or updated generally, but they also said, in addition to the need for an update, they really just get, you need to clean these up. They should be clearer in terms of the language. There should be fewer of them. They have tremendous amount of repetition built into them. So they should be a little, should be fewer standards than we currently have. And we want to increase the rigor of those. I think the call they used was clearer, fewer, higher. Okay? So with that in mind, teachers, educators from across the state worked on that. They worked on it for a total of 5 years before we ultimately had revised standards adopted by the board just this past June, 2019. Yay! Woohoo! Yay? Can I get a yay? All right. Those social studies educators, leaders from across the state, largely from various ISDs and organizations, specific content leaders, are continuing to work. They didn't just say, here are the new standards, pass them, vote them, now we're done and let's move on. It's like we have to actually do some work to successfully implement new standards. That's the phase we're in now, is the implementation phase. So, some new resources are starting to come out from their work, and there's more to come. So, you'll see sort of just the beginning, some things you can start grabbing onto in your districts, taking back to your classroom teachers, knowing there's more to come. There's a team working on this, okay? Among the things that have started, they've been doing rollout sessions. Have any of you attended a social studies rollout session in your districts? I heard a couple yeses. Have they been helpful? I think they're pretty good. They're doing more, so if you haven't yet, there's more to come. I just grabbed a few dates there. On February 21st is the next date. Saginaw's ISD is going to be doing a rollout session, kind of hitting the highlights of the new standards and what help there is for teachers. We are looking at, Elgin's ISD is trying to nail down a March date. Michigan Library and Historical Center will have one coming up in June. Washtenaw's ISD will be hosting a rollout session in August. So keep an eye out, look to your local ISDs for information, okay? Those would be very beneficial for teachers to attend and get familiar with them. Curriculum people, you're going to want to attend one of those as well. The Social Studies Collaborative, PD Collaborative, as it's kind of trying to settle on a name. We have to have a good acronym, apparently, in education. We don't have it yet, so as soon as we have a really difficult acronym, we'll go with it. But they're also trying to develop resources for teachers to use in their classrooms aligned to the standards. They're going to be looking to develop teacher leaders to help with that work of coming up with actual lessons that would align with the various standards. I'm going to put in a plug for the Michigan Council for the Social Studies annual conference coming up April 17th and 18th up in Traverse City. That might be a good opportunity for teachers and curriculum people and district people to attend. They'll have sessions addressing issues related to the new social studies standards as well. So you might want to look at that as another PD opportunity. These are some of what I'll say the partners that are working and supporting the MDE's work to help with the implementation process. We don't want to just leave people abandoned with new standards and not sure what to do with them. So a lot of good content groups out there to help us. All right. Before I start diving into the standards more specifically, I want to kind of like get this one out of the way. What do you suppose is the number one question that I get asked at this point in social studies world? Yeah. Everybody's like, you know, are they going to be on the M-step in the next M-step, this coming, you know, spring M-step? Are we going to be like testing these new standards? People are really panicking about that. So here's the long and the short of it. Ready? Watch the screen. Does the 2020 M-step assess the new standards? No. Whew. Okay. You probably need some time. Okay. And that's the intention. There'll be a transition period. It's an estimate. So say approximately 3 to 5 years before we start seeing the new standards reflected in the items that students are scored on in the M-step. We'll look at that more closely, but that's just kind of to like let everybody breathe easy right off the start. The reason for a transition period is that, number one, we need to have that time to support teachers as they learn and delve into the standards and start seeing how those are going to impact their lessons, how they can look at their instruction in a way that will improve their instruction, and by extension, it will improve their assessment performance as well. So we need time to work with the teachers and give them time to dig into the revised standards. We need time then for those teachers to then take that back into their classroom and begin the implementation process in the classrooms. We need time to develop the M-step. We're going to look at a little bit of test development. For starters, we need to field test items to see how we can look at the format of the test, of the items themselves, as well as incorporating and aligning better to the standards. So that's a process in itself that we'll look at a little bit. Also, I keep saying new standards. I won't apologize. I'm going to keep saying new standards, but we all know they're not new. There are a few new. They're revised. It just seems easier, I know, to say the new standards, the revised standards. Okay. So They're not new, they are revised. We're keeping sort of the foundation that those standards offered. So I like to start off with the what stayed the same, what is not new in the standards. The content expectations. Most are unchanged. Most does not mean all. It means most are unchanged. There are changes, but if you look at the side-by-side of the 2007 standards and the 2019 standards, you'll see over and over and over, unchanged, unchanged, unchanged. Then you'll have some that the content is unchanged, but maybe the location of the standard, the organization of it, has been moved. You see the same standards maybe combined because they were, in fact, repetitive, or as I like to say, repetitive and redundant. Okay. Most of them are unchanged, and a few are still changed, so we've got to look closely to catch those. Okay. The language used in the standards, we'll see some changes for that. Primarily, it's a goal of being more inclusive in language. I'll use the simple, easy example. There are others, you know, examples of language changes, but sort of the basic one is, instead of saying American Indians, we would say indigenous people. Instead of saying slaves, we might say enslaved people or people who were enslaved. Again, that's going to depend a little bit on your grammar and context and how you can, you know, how you can write that information out. But some of those changes. Clarity, again, they got a little wordy, trying to clean them up so that they're clear as to what the expectation is and what we're trying to say. Changing the wording to reflect more academic rigor, academic vocabulary. I'll use a real simple example of that would be in the elementary level, where you might say in 2007 we might have said that, you know, students are going to understand ideas about like yesterday, today, and tomorrow, and we're like, you know, that's not what historians say. We would say the past, the present, and the future, and we're confident that elementary age students are able to start to understand and start using the actual language, okay, of the discipline. So some of those things have been changed as well. The examples that go with the standards, there's some changes there. The biggest change is there are more examples. So the examples that were there previously are still there, and we've added more to a lot of the standards. More examples. Some of that was, again, to be more inclusive, to include points of view or events that had not been included in the past, to bring those in as well. The thing to point out with all the examples is they're just examples. They're not required content. That's for each individual, whether it's a classroom teacher or at a district level, to say what works in our community. How do we address these ideas and the events in a way that will be meaningful to our specific community, our students, our families, our community? And there's more choice there. And it's not a limiting list. It's these are the things you could use, and there may be additional examples that are more appropriate to your lessons, to your practice, to your communities. Okay? Local needs emphasis. This is unchanged. The MSTEP assesses the standards, not the examples. Okay? That's how it was, that's how it is. Examples could be used in the MSTEP as a way of providing context, but they shouldn't be the answer to an item in and of themselves. So for example, if you were teaching about, I'm gonna use as my example most of the day today, looking at one of the standards dealing with the women's rights movement and suffrage movement and so forth. If you were to have as an example in there a specific suffragette, but it wasn't required in the standard, then I wouldn't ask a question where you had to pick the name of that suffragette, A, B, C, or D. But I might have a document or a context piece that refers to that individual by name. Okay? But it wouldn't be the actual question or answer students would be expected to know. It's only an example that they may or may not have had. In the standards, the official publication of the standards, all the examples are highlighted in blue so that they stand out as those are examples, not the standards. So you can kind of distinguish between them as you're planning curriculum. So looking at one of the standards. This is from the 2019 High School U.S. History, looking at Era 8. There are four different specific standards within that era. I pulled out numbers 2 and 3 in the middle of it there. One of them looks at the ideals of the civil rights movement, compare and contrast the ideas of Martin Luther King's March on Washington speech to the ideas expressed in the Declaration of Independence, the Seneca Falls Resolution, and the Gettysburg Address. Now, if I put my classroom teacher hat on and I look at that, what that should be telling me is that if I am looking at trying to design my instruction in a way that aligns with these standards, there are some very specific things I need to be addressing in my classroom. Number one, compare and contrast. That's one of the things historians do. And so I need to be working with my students to understand how to compare and contrast information, events, concepts, and so forth in history, in social studies generally. In addition to that, there's specific content knowledge that's expected in the standard. They need to know who Martin Luther King was. They need to know who that person is. They should be familiar with his March on Washington speech. So I'm going to be doing document analysis. I'm looking at the context in which the document was created and so forth with my students on that specific document. I want them to be familiar with it. They need to be familiar with the Declaration of Independence. Not a bad idea, right? They should be familiar with that one. That's not an optional example you may or may not want to use in your classroom. That would be like an expectation that students have familiarity with the content of that document. The Seneca Falls Resolution, the Gettysburg Address. So as a teacher, like I said, I'm going to pull out excerpts from that. We're going to work on that in the class. We're going to be familiar with those ideas. We're going to be thinking about how they're similar, how they're different, their authors, the point of view, the context in which they were created, the actual ideas expressed in them, where I see similarities, where I see differences, all those things. The next one, women's right. Analyze the causes, course, and reaction to the women's rights movements in the 1960s and 1970s. What stands out to me right there is that's just a lot more vague. I don't have any real specifics, like I can't like get a vocab list for them. Like know this name or it's a little more broad in how that one would work. As a teacher, to me, what helps is I'm gonna look to those examples and say how, you know, like what kind of things, how, you know, what should I be looking to? I'm gonna be looking to that as one source of resources I could use to develop a lesson that would align with that. And again, I point out the examples are may include, but are not limited to, and has several examples that are there. I wanna point out specifically in the examples, for example, they have Betty Friedan and Phyllis Schlafly. I may want to use those two women's rights leaders, speakers, in my classroom. I may choose others. Who else could I pick? That's not included on the list. I'm not limited, so who else could I pick? Any history people? Former Playboy bunny. Just recently had a birthday. She's like 80-something, I think. Gloria Steinem? Okay. She's not on the list. But she would also be sort of one of the leaders of the 1960s, 1970s era in the women's rights debate and topic that I could include. Maybe that's who's in my textbook, so I'll use that one, because that's going to be in my students' assigned reading, perhaps. Or I've done lessons in the past that had that, and so I don't want to, you know, that was good work. It was a good lesson. Students really seemed to like it. I'm going to use it. Okay? May include. Now, here's what I picked this one, well, for lots of reasons, but here's one of the reasons. The 2019 standard and examples that you're looking there are exactly the same as the 2007. Same standard, same language, same examples. No change. Okay? By the way, there's a movie coming out, I think on Netflix within the next month or two, that has, oh shoot, I've gone blank on the actress's name, who's gonna be playing Phyllis Schlafly. Kate, Lord of the Rings, Elf, Kate, no, Blanchett is playing the person who's going to very actively go out and oppose the Equal Rights Amendment and that women, you know, should be, are happy and content in the house and these radicals are just stirring up trouble. Okay, so that would be an interesting one that's coming up. All right, big takeaways so far. Content expectations 2007-2019, largely the same. The MSTEP assesses the standards, not the examples. So we need to focus on that and have some freedom of choice in the examples. Side note, if I'm a teacher using a specific example in the classroom, whether it's one that was in the list or one that I've used, you know, independently, I certainly, in a classroom assessment, would include that in my assessment. if that's something, you know, we've specifically looked at maybe some of Phyllis Schlafly's writings, I would expect them to be familiar with her in a way that the M-STEP wouldn't. Okay. So classroom instruction and classroom assessment are not the same as state-level assessment. You don't want to lose that. Teachers will find that many standards do have additional examples, which I think should be looked at as helpful. More ideas are helpful. Okay. Continuing in this Era 8 strand there, civil rights expanded. Evaluate the major accomplishments and setbacks in securing the civil rights and liberties for all Americans over the 20th century. And a list of examples. In this one, some of the examples are the same from the two versions of the standards. They both said you might want to look at the experiences of indigenous peoples, Latinos, Latinas, new immigrants, people with disabilities, the gay and lesbian community. Those were all in the 2007 examples that teachers could draw from. They've added some more specific developments and ideas they could also incorporate. Do you know who Harvey Milk was? An LGBTQ leader in looking at the gay and lesbian community. I was less familiar with Ruth Ellis, who was also a leader in that community. I would say that some of the contentions that evolved in the process of revising the standards in 2019, a lot of the objections, not 100%, but a lot of the objections were over example issues and feeling that the examples were leading one direction or the other. That's primarily where a lot of the contention came from. So there it is, okay? All right, so that's mostly what's the same. A lot is the same. Now let's look at what's different. All right, fewer standards. They were asked to do fewer, there are fewer. Some of that is by deleting standards, but most of that is by consolidating repetition within a content area or even across content areas. For example, US history and world history may have had some duplication that they felt could be reduced. Okay? So there are fewer standards overall. Again, to a lot of teachers who try to teach courses like world history, that should be like a whew. Because I just hit the ground running the first day of school trying to cram in things and get to the end. So fewer standards could be somewhat reassuring in my classroom and how I structure my classes and what I can do, allowing opportunities that I may not have had with the additional time I might be able to gain. I already said language, more inclusive language, academic rigor, academic vocabulary in the language chosen. Examples, more inclusion in the examples offered and more examples. That's different. And this is the biggest one, the C3 inquiry, framework inquiry. How many of you are familiar with C3? There's a nice picture of it. I should see, hopefully, almost every hand there. I know that not all of you, in fact, if I'm correct, most of you are not classroom teachers. You have different roles. The key is your classroom teachers need to be familiar with the C3 framework. If I were looking at PD for social studies teachers, I would be saying you need to do PD focused on the C3 framework, that you're going to find that can really bring your lessons and your students' learning to life when you learn how to effectively use some instructional changes, starting with questioning, getting students to start from a point of view of questioning information and build on it from there. Yes. Yeah, that's going to be largely through the ISDs that you're going to want to look and see what's on their roles, or ask them and say, here's what we need. What can you put together for me? Because they absolutely can. Okay? All right, the C3. So, to do an overview of the C3 framework, even as an overview, I think would take, days worth of time, which we don't have. Since most hands went up and said you have a basic familiarity with it, that's good. You should be familiar then that the whole idea of it is inquiry. It is inquiry-based, question-based, that you start with questions if you want to learn information. The idea is that it can become more engaging to the students when they're working with trying to solve a problem or answer a question or come up with a new way of thinking about history. So the engagement level tends to be higher. It also opens up the opportunity for students to do what historians do, because historians answer questions. You know, what was the primary cause of the French Revolution? Historians stay awake at night wondering, what was that? Was it an economic cause? Was it the social structure in France at the time? So you start with a question and you're more engaged and you go about trying to discover the answer instead of maybe memorizing, regurgitating. You're trying to discover information and discover how things develop. So developing questions and an inquiry base. Applying the disciplinary tools, concepts and tools, thinking like historians, doing what historians actually do, evaluating sources and evidence. This is where I'd like to see when we start looking at the M-STEP, more of that happening on the M-STEP, where students are going to be given sections from primary source documents and have to do some evaluating of the source and interpreting of that information, considering differing points of view and such. Okay? And finally, answering the question, whatever the inquiry was framed around, trying to answer that question and provide evidence to support an answer. The beauty of it is there isn't one answer to a good, compelling question. There should be different ways of answering it, and the real skill and the learning comes down to how you defend and what evidence you have to support the answer. Okay? So we're moving towards that. All right, I'm going back to my civil rights and women's rights as my example. So kind of get this back in my head. With the women's rights, we were analyzing causes and the course of events and reactions to the women's rights movement in the second half of the 20th century. It's kind of where my focus is going to be. If I'm using an inquiry-based method of learning in a classroom, then with that objective, that standard in mind, I need to think of I as a teacher, and as they learn and get comfortable with it, the students more and more will be the ones developing the compelling question. It's not going to be given to them by the teacher. That's sort of a process they need to learn as well. But you need to think about the questioning part of it. Compelling question, one kind of shorthand way to think of it, is a question that doesn't have one right answer. Like 2 + 2 = 4 is not a compelling question. Okay? Trying to think of one that different students could reasonably answer in a variety of ways with various resources or pieces of evidence to support them. So we can be right. Different answers can be right. That helps you identify that compelling question. So here's a compelling question I came up with. I don't know how compelling you think it is, but here it is. Should the Equal Rights Amendment become the 28th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution? After thorough research, investigation, and study, I would hope that some students would come up with yes, because, and some would say no, because. Okay? Compelling question. In order to get the answer to that question, other than just, you know, shooting off the top of my head and saying, you know, yes, you know, because I said so. In other words, it just becomes an empty opinion. I have a whole lot of questions that have to be answered first. Those are the supporting questions. So I'm going to have to think about, well, you know, I'm going to have to learn a little bit about the women's rights movement and women's rights generally. What's the origin of this Equal Rights Amendment? Some of the early leaders, perhaps. I'm going to think about, you know, who supported it, why, who opposed it, why, where is it at now? I can come up into current events and, you know, issues. Virginia just voted to pass it. Does that mean anything when all this time has gone by? You've been listening in the news at all about the Equal Rights Amendment? In order for an amendment to become an amendment to the U.S. Constitution, how many states have to ratify it? 2/3. For decades, the Equal Rights Amendment has fallen short by one state. Virginia, about 2 weeks ago, voted to pass, to adopt the Equal Rights Amendment. So supporters are over there like, yay, we got an Equal Rights Amendment, and the opponents are like, too late. You know, time's passed. You can't, like, you don't get, like, 2 centuries to get them. You know, you have to. So it's still, you know, it's still working its way through the system. But those are questions you can lead your students to looking into and researching as they try to develop their answer and evidence for their answer to the compelling question. Whole lot of history and civics learning along the way. Okay? In addition to that, we had the other dimensions. I'm gonna, for sake of time, put dimension 2 and 3 together here. Applying disciplinary concepts and tools and evaluating sources and using evidence. I'd like to see more of that happening on assessments, classroom and state assessments. That's what historians actually do. And that's what we want to teach our students to do. They're going to need to delve into those primary and secondary sources. They're going to have to look at point of view of different people, source analysis, reliability of information. They're going to need to look at the context in which events occurred and sources were developed. They're going to use their skills of comparing information, identifying cause and effect relationships between events, change and continuity over time, because you're looking at the women's rights movement over the course of a century and plus, and kind of doing what historians do with historical events and information. It's kind of exciting. I can see you guys are all excited. I can feel the energy in the room, just like, wow, this is awesome. They do still have a lot of coffee out there, don't they? You might want to go for it. All right. I realize that chart is too small, and I've sat in a whole lot of presentations today where they flashed information that I'm like, I can't see that. Tiny little stuff. So the only reason I have, you can see it says historical thinking chart. It doesn't say list of facts to memorize. Okay? It's about thinking. What the new standards and the C3 framework is intended to do within our revised standards is to get students thinking, not just memorizing. Memorize, spit it out for a test, and forget it. That's not the direction anybody wants to go. To be able to do things like identifying an author's position on a historical event instead of just being able to name the author. Okay? That, by the way, that chart, which I really like and I used as a classroom teacher, that is put out by the Stanford History Education Group, SHEG. They do lots of great, go to their website, they've got a lot of great teaching resources. Really good stuff, SHEG. Stanford History, it's the Thinking Like a Historian site. Okay? All right. Now, I'm going to cut through most of this, but just to kind of get an idea. By using the C3 framework, by getting away from the idea of memorizing lists of facts that's contained in a standard, and getting into more analyzing documents and analyzing events, students should be doing more work with primary source documents. Okay? They should be. I pulled up a section from The Feminine Mystique by Betty Friedan. Now remember, this was just an example. The students don't have to know Betty Friedan for the end step. Okay, but she's a good example to use. And so I pulled up that. I might, as a classroom, have students look at that and consider the ideas, consider the time period, 1963, in which these ideas were being expressed, what was sort of the mainstream thought on women and marriage and traditional gender roles. Okay, so I might have them looking through a primary source document by Betty Friedan. Then, which is really fun, working with 21st century students, is to then say, well, what about the ideas of this Phyllis Schlafly, who was outraged at the concept of women expressing this dissatisfaction with their traditional gender roles. She supported a more traditional gender role, which is ironic because she was actually an attorney who spent a lot of time working outside the home. Defending the rights of women to stay in the home. Okay? One of her, I'll jump to the last one here. Why should we lower ourselves to equal rights when we already have the status of special privilege? And she goes on to there, and she goes, so what's wrong with this? And she says, well, here are a few examples of what's wrong with this amendment. It will absolutely, positively make women subject to the draft. Well, that's terrible. Only men should be subject to it because it's okay for them. I don't know. Why any woman would support such a ridiculous, un-American proposal as this is beyond my comprehension. Interesting. Okay. Other things that this C3 framework allows to come into a classroom is to look at other points of view that maybe aren't always heard in history traditionally, so it can bring in more voices, that inclusive piece, if that's how the school wishes to develop their curriculum, based on the local community's needs and interests. Okay, this is one that I came across. This is from someone who basically was saying, why are you even looking at either of those two women? They were only talking about white privileged women who had the option of staying home. What about, you're free to go back into the workforce, who's going to be taking care of your kids? African-American women. And that they weren't being spoken to in this time period. Actually referred to the plight of a select group of college-educated, middle- and upper-class married white women. It's a new angle to look at it. I think that this is the kind of thing that students are going to get way more enthused about than memorizing facts for you. And it also opens a lot of awesome discussions, and definitely that higher level thinking, the rigor of thinking is going to be there. And a lot of different standards. I just picked the one. Mm-hmm. Yep, literacy. Mm-hmm. Yes, and I struggled with that. Yep. And I guess, to be honest, I probably can't give you an answer that like totally satisfies you, because the reality is that social studies subjects are very language dependent. And so we have to work with that in our schools. One of the things, like with the M-STEP and what a classroom teacher needs to do, is when they're looking, this is designed for high school level, but looking at the sources that you're drawing, you have to look at your classroom, your community, and what they may need. Looking at reading level, cutting down. If I had an ESL student, for example, let me get it, I wouldn't give them all of that. That would overwhelm. All right, so I'm going to look at my students and try to, you know, I would do a whole lot of editing on that type of a document and working with them. I may want to group them. I'm going to be working with my ESL teacher in the building as well to help me. Just like I do in any other way, I'm going to have to look to all those supports. But at the end of it, yes, the literacy component is there, and we're aware of it, and yes. Yes. And I taught in East Lansing, which is a very diverse community, and had a lot of ESL students. And it did take a lot of time working with that document interpretation. That wasn't just a natural fit. Yeah, it's a challenge. I know that. And it's a growing challenge as the community is becoming more diverse, not less. I hear you on that. So other documents. Here's one that's not so much language-based. You can use lots of visuals and imagery and such in history that can work as well. Again, though, that can be challenging, especially with cultural differences. If you use things like political cartoons, they don't usually translate well across cultures. You know, it's things that I would look at and say, you know, oh, that's Uncle Sam. That represents America. Somebody else might be like, who's the skinny guy with the, you know, tall hat and red, white, and blue outfit on or something, you know, and culturally. So yes, those are absolutely challenges. I like this one, percent of all college degrees between female versus male. Interesting. Now, kind of counter to that, women in the workforce as beginning around the year 2000, the number of American women in the workforce is declining. That's compared with Canada, Japan, the UK, and European Union's 15 countries within the European Union that are still on the increase. It's the number of women that are working outside the home. The US started to decline, which would be another interesting discussion and investigation. So, and this one I just put up because I like it. Moral of the story, get a job, don't have kids. I just think that's just fun for me. I don't know. I don't know that I would use that with my classroom, but I enjoyed it. I like that. Worry less, happier, less stressed. I don't know. All right. C3 framework is a part of the standards now, and the emphasis is going to be to try to start moving towards that type of instruction in the classrooms. So keeping that in mind. Hoping to bring an increased level of engagement among our students, more student agency in their learning, deeper knowledge, analysis, and those historical thinking skills. The things that historians do, not just what they know. All right. Any other changes? Yes. Sorry, yes. So what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna look at them. I'm going to kind of quickly move through this. My PowerPoint, the section is uploaded to the site here that you can access it if you want more details, but there are other sources, and I'll show you where you can go to find some of this information in a nice, useful way for yourself and for your buildings and districts as well. So starting with the elementary, K-5. Kindergarten, first, and second grade are still organized into the structure of looking at, you know, kind of studying social studies in the framework of myself, myself and others, excuse me, family and school, and then out into my local community, sort of that growing from yourself out into the world, before you're expected to be a little further out in the world and study your Michigan history. Third and fourth grades divided up between pre-statehood, post-statehood, Michigan history. Okay? Fifth grade, U.S. history. So it's the growing out from that self-centered place. Okay? Language changes, a little more academic vocabulary and inclusivity, like we've already said. More examples included in there. For the most part, content unchanged. K-5. Now, again, no major changes. Most are the same. I never say it's all 100% exactly what it was before. Don't worry about it. There's always, wait, we've got to make a few changes just to keep you on your toes. So, some of the changes, there's 4 new standards that didn't exist before. 4 new standards that did not exist before. Not too overwhelming. There they are. Some geography standards and one of the U.S. ones. Okay? That means that I go back to my K-5 teachers and I say, you need to review and look through the new standards with an eye to these specific changes. Okay. U.S. history and geography. That is included in the standards for the 5th, 8th, and then high school level U.S. history course. So beginning in 5th grade, again in 8th, and at the high school level. C3 framework is the goal. The idea in social studies generally is to have more of a focus on citizenship and civic engagement, not just passively memorizing information, but seeing as an active part in a democracy. Some structural changes to reduce that redundancy. Examples, more, language, inclusive. Okay, still all there. Tribal governments. How many of you feel really strong and secure about teaching history related, you know, specific to tribal government? That's probably a weak spot for a lot of K through 12 social studies teachers. I mentioned some of the PD opportunities that are going on. We're going to look at a website here a little bit later today also. And we're trying to get those resources out to you to have more content knowledge yourselves in your districts, okay? Few other U.S. history changes. In the progressive era, they actually added standards. They were told fewer and they added one. Teachers. They had 3 standards addressing the progressive era. They've upped it to 4. And what they're trying to do again is to give a little more depth and not just, you know, be able to list something, but to analyze and to think about cause and so forth. So there's a little bit of a tweak there. Structurally, it looks a little bit different. It's not changed as much as its appearance. They've gone to bullets. I know, that's pretty radical change. Okay, they've got bullets of information. Now, the reason I have that up here, so you can see structurally they got bullets, so it looks different than the 2007 side by side. It looks like, oh, they changed the standard. They just reorganized how it's presented to you. But notice, the blue are examples. Those bullets are required information. Content expectation, not examples. Okay, more Michigan examples. That Michigan history they had in elementary, they're going to continue to, you know, incorporate some of the Michigan's role in various points in history, such as the Civil War. There's one section that could be seen. Okay? Civics, government class. C3 framework, that inquiry-based approach. More focused on a more active, involved citizenship goal, not passive learners. Structural changes to reduce the redundancy. They actually went, those civics people, they went from 96 separate standards down to 54. Not by, you know, deleting, but by clean up language, realize this says the same as that. Why are we saying it twice? Let's say it one time and say it clearly. A lot of that, a lot of combining. Language examples. Rigor, inclusivity, and updates to current issues, current events, current court cases, current topics. In the world of civics, that, you know, current events is really, really key. All right. Few other high school civics or government class changes. They've reorganized. So it's divided into strands. Strands 1, 2, and 3 are basically still strands 1, 2, and 3, but they added a new strand 4 called Rights and Liberties in the USA. And that's going to realign all the rest of the standards or strands after that point. So that what used to be strand 4 is now 5 U.S. and World Affairs. It was always in there, but it got bumped out to fit in a new selection of thoughts and ideas there. And that meant the old five, only they combined it with the old six. Five and six became the new six. So structural changes, organizational changes, and one new strand put in there. Sixth and seventh grade world history. This is an organizational change more than content change, but it's kind of a significant looking organizational change, right? The way it was before, in sixth grade, students primarily focused on, you know, one hemisphere, seventh grade, the other hemisphere, and that is so not what world history is. That's, you know, Eastern and Western Civ. It's not, and yet we called it world history, which is very much misleading. So instead of having that hemisphere division, we said they should be learning world history in world history. Let's put them back together and separate or organize them out differently to make that quantity of content more manageable. So now, sixth grade, they do world geography. Seventh grade, world history and geography. So a lot of the standards just got moved. So seventh grade is world history. High school always had world history, it still does. Seventh grade, they're gonna start with early, you know, foundations of human history and look at the Paleolithic and the agricultural revolution and early civilizations and the, you know, Egyptians and the Greeks and all that fun stuff up to around the year 300. And then they're gonna have sort of a bridge look at the next era, bridging over to the high school level. High school's gonna pick up and move forward from there. So structural changes. They've also reduced the redundancy, which makes this more manageable. The goal and hope is that particularly at the high school level, there's going to be more opportunity to get up to more modern times and more current events, which as a world history teacher and an AP world history teacher, I found particularly frustrating because so much of the history that you're teaching is the foundation for why the world is the way it is today, and then you run out of time before you get to the world today. That was like the whole point, the whole arc was that it would connect. And then June came and you never made the connection and said, bye. You know, and they're like, I don't really remember world history. And it's because, well, we didn't tie it up, you know, we didn't connect anything for you. I'm sorry, we ran out of time. So hopefully with some restructuring, it's going to allow for those opportunities. A few other world history changes. Again, they've done some renaming and so forth. There used to be era 7 and 8, and a lot of people think, why did you cut everything out of era 8? And it's like, we didn't, it was a combined thing. And again, it had sort of this false division where we had one era looking at the Cold War and one era after the Cold War, and that isn't how historians generally look at it. There's a continuity and a flow in there, so it's just putting it together again. So it's basically the post-World War II era to now put into a single, single era. Still going with that C3 inquiry-based learning. Religions and belief systems. I want to say that at the school board meetings dealing with the adoption of the new standards, there was a group of people that were, I found, incredibly impressive in exercising citizenship, and that was the Sikh community. Did a really beautiful job of organizing. They looked at the standards and they said, okay, they're, you know, they have listed here specific world religions that students should be familiar with, and ours isn't there, and they came in and explained why they felt it should. And the school board chose to include Sikhism in the list of, like, you should be familiar with, you know, list of major world religions. So. But I thought that it was a great example of active, you know, participation in a democratic process, that citizenship piece. So that's in there. Economics. This is straight from our econ person. Economists are so concise. Okay? So say, what's changed in economics? And they're like, there it is. I'm like, okay. We've consolidated to reduce redundancy. Don't freak out. We didn't cut everything. It's there. We just cleaned it up for you. We did add a few specific concepts that are used in economic discussions that students should be familiar with. And we've added an emphasis on the very practical finance, personal finance topics. That's something that parents have called for a long time. The benefits of knowing how to, you know, use credit or pay your bills or budget, things like that. Okay? That's our economists talking to us. You notice there's not, here's some other things. They're very concise. All right. That's just a flyover overview. So, other resources for you and for your teachers. You need to look at the standards. Okay? I am ashamed to say that I taught for many, many years before I stopped and looked at the standards. I looked at, you know, how I had been taught and what I liked and what I thought you're supposed to learn in this particular content area, the textbook that I had been given, how the teacher before me taught it, any number of things. It took a while before I really started digging through the standards. So sooner than later would be a good piece of advice. There's a link to finding an online PDF of the standards. There's a side-by-side, which is particularly helpful. At the conference website's resources, I uploaded a PowerPoint. I also uploaded the PDF of the side-by-side. That as someone who's been teaching in the social studies subject area, it helped me to be able to see if this is what it was and this is what has or hasn't changed, and have just side-by-side with a little explanation even there of like this was just a, you know, moving or consolidating, or this is a new standard. And I can be like, okay, highlight that. This is, you know, something's changed. So the side-by-side is particularly helpful. The C3 framework, that familiarity, there's a link to the PDF of that C3 framework that was created by the National Council for the Social Studies and their publications. Social Studies Hub website. This is something new. It's still in its baby stages, but I'm very excited about it. I want to talk to you a little bit about the hub. That's one of the things that those educators that are working on the implementation, this is one of the things they're designing and developing to help districts and help classrooms. Also, like I said, I've already kind of pushed for those rollout presentations. Check with your ISDs and any other PD opportunities, like the Michigan Council for the Social Studies conference coming up, to look into those. Okay. This is the side-by-side comparison, and the only reason I added this slide in here is because of the unreliability of the internet here anyway. I thought the odds of me being able to click on this link and open it for you seem to be getting pretty slim the past few days, so I thought I better throw some hard copies at my slide. So this is that comparison side-by-side. As a teacher, I would find this just invaluable. This is what 2007 looked like, and these are the 2019. Some of them are just moving, relocating. Some of them are new. But the side-by-side is really nice. Highly encourage you to encourage your classroom teachers to go grab those and look at those. This is that new social studies website, the social studies hub that's been put together. It is a very easy to remember, mysocialstudies.org. Nice website to remember, mysocialstudies.org. It is still in the process of sort of being populated with information. So it's not, you know, everything you ever dreamed of, but you can see what the potential is. It's got a few resources that will help you, and more to come, okay? In that website, if I could pull it up and we scroll down, imagine we have just done that, you would see that they have links to different information that teachers may have. The standards themselves, so you can look at them, professional learning calendar, you're asking where can I get PD, that'll become more and more populated. Right now it's got some of those rollout sessions are there, but that should increase. Some of the other organizations like the Economics Council and things like that you can click to their sites and find PD opportunities and resources that they're providing that align with the standards, and teaching resources. Now, sad, because as a teacher, I'd be like, teaching resources, just go right there. You know, that's the one I want. If you click on it, it says, coming soon. And it is coming soon. Implementation will take time. It's not gonna happen overnight. So it is coming soon, okay? One of the other things that I liked and I would like if I were in a classroom still is they're putting together these little short, like 5 to 10 minute video links, meeting with sort of content leads in each of the different content areas, having a conversation with them, saying, you know, what do you think are the significant changes? What do teachers need to know? Help us understand the revised standards. This one was regarding the civics changes. With those short little video overviews that a teacher could watch, they also have a link here where there's like a sheet that has listed out examples, some of the changes, and a hard copy of it. So you can kind of pick your subject. They've done civics, they've got a world history video, they've got US history video, they've got the econ video with the most recent one. They've been putting up one each month, and you can go back and get them from the beginning up to the most current, which was econ. I'm a little scared to say that in a few months they're gonna be doing assessment. I don't wanna be on video, but that's to come as well. They're also getting hold of a leader in the tribal community to help with that, you know, and content knowledge for incorporating some tribal government information with the new standards, and there'll be a video just on that. So that'd be a great resource to pass along to those that might need it. This is also on the site, so you can click to look at those standards. That's really the beginning point. They've got the full document, the side-by-sides down in there too, but perhaps even more helpful to a teacher, I'm not going to read the entire, I'm going to look for what's most relevant to me because I've got limited time in which to do this learning of my own. And so I'm going to look at specific to my subject, my grade level, and maybe look at where I'm at and maybe, you know, grade level above and a grade level below, and go from there for starting. Okay? And they've got links to pull up PDFs of all those things. So mysocialstudies.org, good site. All right, now we're all experts on the not new but revised social studies standards, yes? We've only scratched the surface, people. I've told you that. We've only scratched the surface. And there is definitely more. If I were a curriculum person, I would be delving into those standards and, you know, with my highlighter and pen. Okay? All right. M-STEP implications. Assessment by the state. Not what's happening in classrooms. Not about formative assessment. It's not about the inquiry and how I'm going to teach this in a classroom. This is the state-level assessment. And the limitations that are imposed on trying to do a statewide assessment. Okay? So, kind of the M-STEP of the future. First of all, it's kind of hard to change the M-STEP in social studies because teachers already love it the way it is. Yeah. So I hate to make changes because it's going to upset people. And they're going to be like, why are you messing with a good thing? Okay. Maybe, maybe not. Okay. Here's the future in M-STEP, social studies. Context-based item sets. How many of you are familiar with AP history multiple choice testing? Okay? It might be a slightly plagiarized, renamed idea. Okay. The idea is that instead of making the M-STEP social studies a game of Trivial Pursuit, where you're just kind of like, okay, we're in the US history category, Alex, I'll take US history for 400. And they just kind of throw one in there that's somewhere in U.S. history, and then the next one might be a different era, might be, you know. And you're just kind of like mentally jumping, students are, to try to bring them into a particular topic, concept, event, and stay there for a few questions. Let them be in that place, give them some context, give them some background so that they can trigger their knowledge and their ideas and what they've worked on in that area. Okay, get them on the right track and ask and stay there for a few questions. So we're going to try to develop some context-based questions. Now I'm going to go back to this woman in the front who was concerned about ESL. You're going to be concerned about ESL. Because some of the context, that's where the writing or the literacy piece comes in. The more students work on that in the classroom, the less shock they will have when they see it on the assessment. But that is the piece to be worked on. Literacy, literacy, literacy. To have three or four questions that go with a context before moving into another context. The context doesn't have to all be language-based. There will be images and, you know, graphs or paintings or what, you know, I'm trying to think of off the top of my head here, different things as well. Trying to keep them relatively short. We don't want to have this, you know, massive 20-minute reading session in the middle of a social studies test. So trying to keep them short. Also addressing grade level appropriateness. The M-STEP, so if I were doing a fifth grade, I'm going to look at the context. If it's a reading one, I'm going to look at the grade level, the readability of it, and I'm going to try to design an M-STEP that actually presents the reading level about two grade levels lower. Okay? To address some of the literacy, potential literacy obstacles to success. Okay? There will still be continuing use of standalone items as well, but moving towards that context base. Unlike the AP exam where they're all what they call stimulus-based item sets, okay, there will still be some standalones, but presumably organized in a way that makes sense too logically, so you're not just like, you know, jumped out. You know. And what is, you know, comparative advantage in the middle of US history? That shouldn't happen. Okay, you should still be able to stay in the zone, is the goal. This is our best estimate for when this would be implemented fully into the M-STEP of the future, okay? I already said, 2020, the upcoming M-STEP, old standards, test format, no changes, it's exactly what we've seen in this coming spring. 2021, field test items. We're working with teachers developing those context and item sets. And then we need to field test them, which means they are slipped into the test, but the students are not scored on those. They're only scored on operational items, which will be based on the old standards and look like the old standards. So we need to field test. And then we need to get the data back from actually testing and see how it performed on that test. Did it do what we thought it would do? Okay. Did it assess fairly, equitably across different test takers and communities and regions of the state and all sorts of things? Then we may need to do some changing, revising, cleaning, fixing, tossing, redeveloping, and field testing. So 2021, field testing of context-based items. 2022, continuing field testing of context-based items. And hopefully, by 2023, some of those field test items will have the feedback to tell us those questions that are good, valid items for assessing student understanding or student mastery of whatever standard or standards we were going for. We'll have that information and know this is ready to go operational. If it isn't, we continue the field testing process. We don't say, this is a terrible question. No, this didn't do anything we wanted. Test them on it. No, you know, we'll continue as the process and the information that we get would instruct us. Okay? So, 2023, and that goes back to giving that time for teachers for learning the new standards, implementing them in the classrooms. That all has to be carried through as well. Okay. Any questions on that? In the M-STEP piece? All right. There's that historical thinking chart again that you couldn't see before. Yes. We are actually this year. Yeah. I didn't even think of that, but yeah, because we did part one, part two, and there was really no logical reason for the distinction, and most people just kind of powered through the next and then the next. They just had to enter ticket information twice. You know, it'll be one test. Yep. And there's no time limit on the test, so.
Right, but
it's really that's what we were told. So it is a one test ticket year, if that helps you. And it would still be. The reason I pulled this back up again is because, again, with the context-based item sets, it would be a matter of, you know, for example, we looked at the one that said they specifically need to be familiar with, you know, certain documents or certain, you know, leaders in history. You could have items on that, but also more looking to the what students are able to do, not just what they know. What can they do with information? What can they do with what they've learned? Things like identifying, you know, point of view or source information, thinking about that. All right, now, I'm gonna cut this way down. How am I doing on time? Anybody help me out there? Oh, well, we're good. We'll jump over. I have some items, some ideas here, and I think what I'll do is, let me do this. Okay, yep, I'll just use that one. All right, this is a excerpt from a primary source document. This was actually a banner held up by a suffragette outside of the White House in 1917 to tell President Wilson at that time to give women the right to vote. And this was a banner flag that was held out front just to, you know, catch his attention as a way of being heard among women. He's saying that basically, you know, you're sending our young men off to fight in World War I, to fight for democracy, and yet you're denying it to, you know, this huge section of your population here at home, you know, give women the right to vote. So this might be a context that's going to take me into a century, a time period, a place in U.S. history. I'm going to be thinking about women's rights. I'm going to be thinking about voting. Hopefully it's triggering information in my head about the suffragette movement. I'm thinking of that Seneca Falls document that my teacher had in class that we were looking at and working at, are working on. I'm thinking about the 19th Amendment, and all of these things are being triggered through giving a context into a series of questions. Then I can answer several items, not just one item, move on to the next topic of the moment. I looked at this and I looked through the standards and I thought, you know, I could use that context as sort of a springboard to numerous standards within our U.S. history standards. Okay. I also thought that if I took the time to work on some items there, I might be able to find a way of doing some really nice connections between the women's rights movement and the African American civil rights movements, both before World War I and after. The the impact of war and service in the war and so forth on those movements, all sorts of ways that you can start connecting information up, okay, and looking at multiple things. So that's what I mean by context-based item sets. All right, because of time, I'm going to skip over all that. Here's how an item lands on the M step. Teachers. I need teachers. Okay? Teachers write the items that go on the test. So they're trained on how to do that. They're assigned standards and context to develop items to go on that test. We worked with them in that process very closely in their context and item writing. And then MDE starts going through those and thinking, you know, how can we, what editing, do we need any graphics, do we need images added to this? We have a wonderful comp team at the state that does that for that work for us and do a beautiful job. And there's a continuing process. This thing sort of has all the arrows going in a single direction, but actually there'd be work back and forth before moving it to the next step. Okay. Then it's going to go to, again, teachers, committees made up of teachers are going to look, people that did not write that question are going to look at it and say, you know, this question has some content issues, there's some historical inaccuracies in here. That should be something we need to have caught. Or they're going to look at that and say there's some bias issues here. We think that this might disadvantage certain populations, and how could we, maybe through changing language and or options or somehow address some bias or sensitivity issues. And we're going to have that process of working then with teacher groups, teacher committees, and working back and forth as we continue it along the process. Okay? Because of time, unless you're just dying, like you're going to stay late because this is like grabbing you, isn't it? I know, right? The dream. I'm living the dream. Okay? All right, we're going to continue. There's a lot of editing, a lot of changing, cleaning up, reconsulting with teachers, continuing that process. It's not just, oh, this is a good question, let's put it on the test and see what happens. I mean, there's quite a lengthy process. A lot of redundancy. There are a lot of eyes on every single item throughout the process before it ever gets into a field test position on a test. And then again, before it can go into the actual operational scored item category. Okay? But with this process, field testing is where we're going with that context item sets here coming up for the future. We're going to be doing lots of field testing of those items. They'll have gone through a long process before they ever get that, you know, prize spot of field test item on a test. And then we get scores and we go back and look at it again. And we have teachers coming in to help us with that process to say, this is some of the statistics we're getting on that item when it field tested. Do we see any problems? Are there any flags regarding content? How come students like seem to be evenly split between, you know, option C and option D? Is there a chance they're both right? And, you know, that's double keyed? How, you know, things like that. So we're going to keep looking at content. We're going to keep looking at bias and sensitivity concerns that will come up as we go through it. If we need to either scrap an item completely or continue that editing, fixing, changing process and then refield test it. And say, okay, was that the issue? Was that the concern? Or is there something else here that we're not seeing that students are not performing on this? Ultimately, the goal is to have a pool of solid items that assess student understanding of the standards, student ability to apply some of those skills that historians use, that then become the pool for operational items of the test of the future. Okay? All of this, get rid of that, all of this depends on teachers. Okay? It all depends on teachers. Plus, the more teachers that are involved in the process, the less teachers that can complain about the results, right? They need to be part of it. Okay. We need writers. We need teachers that will come in and work on the developing of context and development of items to assess specific standards within the system. We're going to be doing an item writing in 2 weeks. And we're going to be training on the new standards and how to write, not necessarily even write, but vet good context pieces and the items that then could assess standards to go with them. So it's going to be interesting. We've changed it up a bit. Instead of usual item writing where they're writing, you know, kind of standalone multiple choice trivia questions, trivial pursuit questions, and they would come in for a total of 3 days to work on that. We are now expanded. They're going to come in 3 days, and we're going to work and learn how and start working on it together, and they're going to have to come back I don't know, what is it, about a month and a half, 2 months later, right? Yeah, have them come back and say, okay, let's, you know, see where are you at, how is it going, and, you know, do we need to do any course correction here, and how are we going, and let's work on this some more, 3 more days. So it's an opportunity for teachers to learn the new standards, to know better on developing assessments for their classroom as well as the MSTEP, and they do get paid, because teachers get really tired of being asked to volunteer. Okay? $250 a day, 6 days. Not bad. Okay. We need teachers to serve on the content advisory board, people who have not written the item, looking at that item and assessing it for its content. Is this historically accurate? Is this true in terms of our civics understandings and the Constitution? Is this accurate information? Things like having more than one right answer. I know as a classroom teacher that frequently does happen, where you think you've written it very clearly and then you realize, why did all the students pick the wrong answer? And then you start looking and you're like, well, you know, I can see how they could interpret that, that I didn't see that when I created it because I had this in mind. So we need those fresh eyes to see in the development process before it's ever field tested, and then after it's field tested, when we get the data, they come. You know, we need teachers to come back again and say, okay, the data you know indicates there is a content problem that we've missed. Let's look at that again. We need teachers to look at the bias and sensitivity issues in items. I remember seeing as an example an item that was asking about, I think it was a question that was very largely based on Belle Isle in Detroit area. And they're like, some kid in the UP is going to be completely like, what? What is this? You know, fill in a bubble, move on. You know, just geographically, there can be bias within questions that we don't always think. So, bias and sensitivity committees. All right. There is an online application process to do this. It isn't just, let me know after, you know, after we're done here, or shoot me an email and I'll sign you up. You need to do an online application process that then will come back through MDE to assign that. This will take you straight to that link if you wanted it, and you can save it on your phones, pass it on to your teachers that you think would be great at any one of those roles. Okay? Any one of those roles. We're particularly heavy in trying to recruit item writers. And again, who wouldn't want to spend time writing test questions? It's like the best part of teaching. Maybe second only to grading. You know, that's a close second, but no. It actually, I think it offers a nice piece that frequently as a classroom teacher I didn't have when it came to developing my assessments, any assessment in my classroom, is that it was something that was done in isolation. And this offers a nice collaborative piece to it that can make it far more enjoyable and beneficial and useful as just your own PD. It really is good PD. Anybody that has done grading of written work for AP courses, that collaborative nature can make is a game changer in the experience and in what you learn as a teacher as well. So, and that is it. Contact information, if you need any follow-up or questions, or you just can't quite find that application site, but you've got, you know, 20 amazing teachers that all want to sign up, each of you have that many, then that's where you can go to get those, get that information. Any questions? Do we have new social studies standards in Michigan?
No.
No. They're just revised, but we need to watch for the revisions. We need to prepare ourselves for the revisions. For the item writing this time round? Okay.